2020 was one of the hottest years ever, and it brought to an
end the warmest decade ever recorded. More than 15,000 scientists are sounding an alarm about climate change. They call it a
says the effect of global warming is so severe the region is actually shifting to a different climate.
They've also found they had underestimated the rate of change.
Experts say that we have until 2030 to avoid catastrophe.
2020 was the hottest year on record.
If changes are not made and made soon, there will be irreversible damage to the planet.
Hello and welcome to My Green Podcast. I'm Jarvis Smith.
I'm Katie Hill.
And I'm Joe Wood.
This is the show about living a sustainable, ethical life without drastically altering your lifestyle or blowing up your bank account. Everything from quality green products and where to get them.
To easy changes you can make now to help make this world a healthier place.
Later in the show, we'll be joined by the author of the eco-friendly children's book, Away, Danny Seater. But first, let's have a look at some of the recent green news.
The river charity Thames 21 has released data showing that a mound created by wet wipes has grown to the size of two tennis courts and over a metre tall. So the last time I read about this, it was the size of two double-decker buses. So this is like, this is growing.
It's growing. Yeah. It's a mountain of wet wipes that's been discovered when laser and sonar scans of the Thames riverbed were taken for London's new super sewer, which is going to tackle 95% of sewage overflows that pollute the Thames at the moment. So it's been an ongoing, they've been scanning the riverbed and they found this huge mountain of wet wipes. They're usually made of plastic. So when they get into the Thames, they bind with natural sediments to create these really enormous mounds, and they change the contours of the river. So the pollution is just, it's a huge threat to the wildlife in the Thames.
Yeah, Vivi's got a children's book about this. It's actually where I got loads of information about it. And essentially it's the wipes and then it mixes with the grease that goes down the sewers as well, doesn't it? And then they bind together.
Yeah.
And it's actually really disgusting.
It's horrible. It's horrible. And we use so many. We use 11 billion wet wipes a year in the UK, and 90% of them contain plastic. It's criminal. So, and you know, people think, oh, I can just flush the odd wet wipe away and it doesn't seem like a massive deal. But there are 300,000 blockages every year in our sewers. So it is a
Herbie
big...
is not happy about
it. He doesn't like it. He doesn't like the wet wipe monsters.
No. But the beauty of it is there are loads of biodegradable options now, and they're not that much more expensive than the plastic ones. So
loads. And you know what, they just need to be banned. Fleur Anderson, the Labour MP for Putney, she's proposed a 10-minute rule bill that would outlaw the use of plastic in wet wipes, and it's totally the right way to go. So you know, just let's speed that up and let's just get plastic out of wet wipes. It doesn't need to be there. People have shown that it's not necessary.
As parents, you know, we've always been conscious about it, haven't we, since the beginning, really. I mean, actually, not only the wet wipes themselves, but also not using those wet wipes, which most of them are the plastic ones, that have quite toxic ingredients on them. Like, you wouldn't want to wipe your bum or your baby's bum or, you know, things with them anyway. So definitely, people, look for the alternatives. There are some great brands out there. You can also find some on My Green Pod. So, yeah, just go out and find your alternative biodegradable, compostable wet wipes.
I would say go for the reusable ones. You know, we've been kind of tricked into thinking we need wet wipes. They're so pointless. You don't need them at all. Don't let anybody con you into believing that when you have a baby you suddenly need to use wet wipes. You can use a reusable cotton, organic cotton wipe that you just, and just water, that's all you need, and then just wash it. It's so simple.
Yeah, it is. I suppose when you're going out, it's not so practical, but yeah, no, I take that on board. You trumped me.
Not the first time, won't be the last.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. Okay, moving on. So in other news, sales staff, and I love this, at the fur salon at Harrods were caught misleading customers about the conditions animals on fur farms are kept in.
This
I mean,
just...
this is Did somebody get a video of this? I hope so.
It's a disgrace. They were exposed by a secret shopper who was told in the Harrods fur salon that, let's just check this, they were told that animals in fur farms don't suffer. And this is the real shocker. They were told that they've got their own private space, exactly like Battersea, as in Battersea dogs and cats homes. Like, they're being looked after and they're being loved and cared for, and that they can, it's just unbelievable. I cannot believe, it really does beg a belief. I was in shock when I read this.
So hold on, let's just unpick this a little bit. Now, presumably, the management at Harrods wouldn't be telling their staff this was the case if they didn't believe it was. So this must have filtered down from...
No, I think there were four different, because obviously the first salon has different brands. So it's got Max Mara and it's got a few different... fashion houses within the fur salon that they're selling. But the point was, they were all wearing Harrods name badges, even though they worked for the separate branded companies, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah,
but they were all representing Harrods. They were there, they had Harrods name badges on, and they were on the shop floor there. So the staff were questioned, and they were filmed by Humane Society International. And unfortunately for the staff, this charity had recently exposed the absolutely horrendous conditions on fox fur farms in Finland, which is Europe's biggest producer of fox fur. So the animals, they exposed the conditions. They were confined in small, these barren wire factory farm style cages, just 1 meter squared. So it was barely longer than their body length from nose to tail.
I'm just thinking Cruella de Vil in this very moment.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised that you were even allowed to make fur products these days. I mean, it's just, how long has this ban been going on for?
Well, fur farming in Britain on ethical grounds has been banned since 2000. But the problem is that the UK is still importing, it's imported more than £850 million of fur from countries like France, Italy, Poland, China, the United States. So what the charity and a lot of campaigners are asking for is for the government to just stop it by banning UK fur imports and sales. And 72% of the British public agree with that. So the government, there is a mandate for this, and the government is currently considering a fur sales ban as well as a fur farming ban, which is really what we need to do.
Well, I'd love to hear from our listeners about this, because I'm surprised, genuinely, that people are still buying fur.
Yeah.
So who are the people out there that are buying fur? If you guys know anybody that's buying fur and the reason why they buy it, please email us and let us know. We'll give you the email address at the end.
Yeah, because there is demand somewhere in the world. More than 100 million animals are killed for their fur each year worldwide. So that's disgusting. Foxes, raccoon dogs, mink, chinchilla, rabbits.
Oh my gosh, disgusting.
It's horrible. What? So that's the equivalent of three animals dying every second just for their fur. And anybody who says that it's a byproduct, they are lying. That was one of the things that they were said in Harrods, that they were kind of making out that fur was a byproduct of the meat industry and that it was all perfectly ethical. It's not. So don't let anybody con you into believing that it is. It's just not. It's wrong and it needs to end.
So now it's time for our regular feature, Let's Talk About Six, Baby. Six easy steps anyone can make to lead a more sustainable life.
And today we talk about our step six, how we holiday.
I mean, is anyone going on holiday right now?
Well, we're moving around the country probably to go and to visit friends and family. Christmas, is that on your diary?
Oh, I see, no? The holidays. Yeah. See, I'm a traditional British man, where I call Christmas. I don't call it the holidays, but yeah, no, I get it. So, I mean, we're going into lockdown, aren't we? Isn't that imminent?
By the time this goes out.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of noise about Omicron, there's a lot of noise about people moving around, the government are advising people to just kind of just chill and just be careful, they can't not let us travel around for Christmas. So, the thing is about this is that if we're visiting friends and family over the holidays, right, how do we do that in a sustainable way? Now, the big issue is if you want to get the train somewhere, public transport, how do you carry all the presents or the turkey or, you know, stuff like that. So what are the options?
I think you don't do that. What you do is you arrange for all of the presents and things to be at the house that you're going to be spending Christmas at.
I'm just seeing Amazon flashing up in front of
Amazon.
Me.
My
nemesis, the MyGreenPod nemesis.
No, you don't. Not Amazon. You just get the presents. You go Christmas shopping or you buy stuff online and you just get it sent to the... You get it sent to the house. But the problem that you foresee with that is that if we do go into lockdown, that's Christmas buggered, isn't it? If you can't get to that place and all your presents are there. So My brother and sister-in-law have got this very problem because they're coming up to us for Christmas and they've got kids. So what do? Do they try and get everything in the back of her Ford Fiesta or do they get it sent up before them?
Yeah, no, I think getting sent is a good idea. I mean, you know, putting aside that you know, platform that's named after a rainforest, you want to shop with platforms that plant trees in the rainforest, which is what we do at MyGreenPod. But, you know, we're not the only one. There are lots. But yeah, OK, so get things shipped to the addresses. But then you've got the nightmare of if you go into lockdown, you're not going to have any presents for your kids. This is a real tricky one. I'm going to put this out to our listeners again to ask them what they are considering doing. Because I think this could really open up some opportunities, because you know you've got the nightmare of public transport. You know, all British Rail always breaks down when the wind blows and you get leaves on the line. So let alone frozen snow. You know, this kind of easterly cold weather, bitterly cold weather that we're getting. So
I suppose what you're saying is that if you are going to somewhere else for Christmas, you sort of need a car.
Yeah, well, you do. So go out and buy an electric car, everyone. And if you can't buy one, just steal one. I mean, really.
Borrow one. Just lease one. You can lease it for a week, can't you?
Well, the amazing thing is about that, Katie, is brilliant. You can actually lease. Not for a week, probably. You can hire for a week from, you know, companies like EV Rent. You can lease for a month. You can actually lease at a competitive rate from brands like Onto and EV, Octopus EV, rather. And, you know, they do this monthly kind of subscription service now. So it is amazing. So consider that, or, you know, leave 4 or 5 days early and walk.
Stay at home.
Stay at home by the fire. Don't send your presents anywhere and just have a lovely time. No, I feel bad about this because last year, you know, we had such a nightmare, didn't we, at Christmas? We weren't able to visit, you know, your parents and my parents, and it was all a bit of an anticlimax. So let's hope we do not get spun into lockdown this year.
Do we want to talk about people who are going to be jetting off to the sunshine over Christmas and just saying you don't need to do that, just enjoy Christmas winter? I don't know.
I'm one of these people that loves a bit of sunshine, not necessarily at Christmas, but just after.
Always. Just always.
Well, always, just yeah. Yeah. Well, I am part Indian and a Leo. So, you know, I've got the double whammy of like needing the sun god. But yeah, I mean, I know quite a few people that are going away and wanting to go away. And you've got this issue around what countries can you go to without quarantining and everything else. But I think if you're traveling abroad, the essence is, yes, mainly you've got to fly. So if you can at least offset your flying
could you get a ferry to mainland Europe and go from there? Could you get a train?
Let's start with flying. If you have to fly, because you can't get to places like Brazil or India or Thailand or whatever, which is, you know, Australia, they're huge Christmas destinations for particularly to visit family. So at least go to, you know, Eden Project or Tree Sisters, or come to MyGreenPod. We've got a tree subscription, and just get a load of trees put back in the ground. Because it could be once a year thing. I don't have a massive issue about people traveling once a year for just an amazing, epic, you know, spirited, soulful holiday. Something that's really going to boost your well-being, right?
Yeah, and if you're doing everything, if you're doing other stuff throughout the year, it does. Yeah, I don't see a problem with that, really.
But you're right, we can also get the ferry. But, you know, the issue is time. I think that there will be time in the very near future where a lot more robots are going to be doing a lot more work, and people, human beings, will have a lot more time on their hands. So you will be able to consider slow travel. You know, you'd be able to consider sailing to places. But right now, society is not set up. We have to get somewhere really quickly, have a holiday, get back. And it's actually often quite a stressful thing. Yeah. So we just need to vote for a different political party in the next election and vote for those parties that are actually supportive of completely changing the way that we inhabit our planet.
Coming up next, Joe talks to today's very special guest, Danny Seater.
Our guest today is founder of EcoAble and author of eco-friendly children's book, Away. Hey, Danny, how are you?
I'm really good, Jo. Thanks for inviting me to be here. It's really nice to chat to you.
Yeah, it's lovely to chat. And I absolutely love the book, actually.
Oh, thank you.
Tell us all about Away. Tell me how you came up with the idea.
I used to be an early years teacher and used to teach in preschool. Books and stories were part of everything we did all day, every day. They were the things that the children chose in the role play, outside. So that I knew that they were fundamental to learning new concepts, new vocabulary, new ideas. Yeah. And I suppose it was when I set up EcoAble that I realised that I'd always wanted to write a book and I hadn't really quite known what book. but I felt quite strongly that I wanted to write a book that was accessible to small children to help them to understand the concepts around taking care of our planet and the impacts on the environment and the animals within it and ourselves. So that's really the reason behind it. And I didn't really have to spend a lot of time thinking up the idea. It just sort of came to me. I think with everything that I do in the ecosphere, sort of learning stuff for myself, learning from scratch, you know. And then I just kind of put all of those ideas into the book and found an amazing illustrator to work with who just completely got what I wanted it to look like and feel like. And
The illustrations are so beautiful. I mean, it is a lovely book. I've got my grandsons here and I think it's just gorgeous. And the fact
that
you published it yourself, haven't you?
Yeah. We along with everything to do with EcoAble, we've self-funded everything. We've kind of, you know, really tightened our belts and buckled in to fund the book, really. It felt really important that it was done in the right way. So I really wanted the process to be as eco-friendly as possible. So there's no lamination on the hardback books. There's no lamination at all on it. So it's plastic-free. We've had to use glue, we've used vegan glue. It's stitched the spine so on the hardback. So we've gone for the processes and it's 100% carbon balanced recycled paper that we've got and eco-friendly ink. So not only was it important to have an eco story, it was important to have the whole process be as eco-friendly as possible because I didn't want to add loads of damage to the environment, lots of plastic, things that will eventually have to be got rid of. So that was really, really important. So that's one of the reasons we decided to self-publish.
Wasn't it hard to go about trying to self-publish? I mean, there must be so many people out there who'd like to publish a book, but to actually go about and do it, and how do you go about doing that?
I mean, writing the story and getting the illustrator sort of seems the simple bit now. You know, we worked on it for a good few years. You know, so I could pay the illustrator over time. And then we were really lucky to find a lovely small business who helped us do the layouting of the book because I'd never done any of that. So I didn't even know size or how to put text in. And I wanted the text to jump off the page and move around. And it was, you know, that was a whole learning thing. I have no idea how to do that. So we found a lovely lady called Tash. She's done all of the layout for us. And then a local printing company who totally got what we were trying to do. I suppose the hardest thing is funding it yourself, to be honest. You know, it's expensive to do it all, but I kind of feel in the long run it'll be worth it, because it means that we can put it out in the right way, we can tell people about it in the right way and do all of that.
Danny, tell me a bit more about publishing an eco book. Was it difficult to find an eco publisher?
I think I was really lucky, because I met a lovely lady, Tash, who did all the layouting for us. And she was already working with a local printers in Shutesbury who have done some eco stuff before. So I think it was just sort of meant to be almost, because they were completely on board with what I wanted from it and checked with me at each stage. They had access to the carbon balance paper, and it was quite a straightforward and simple process. So I don't know what other printers are like, but you know, I think they were very amenable.
You were just very lucky to find somebody that had done that before. That was brilliant.
Yeah, and it worked out really, really well. But I think also, you know, they listened when I said I didn't want, you know, glue and that kind of thing, and I preferred it stitched and that sort of stuff, and I didn't want lamination. So I think sort of getting a printer who understands what you're aiming for and then is willing to work with you is really important.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. So, Danny, tell us more about the story and how it will appeal to children. Give us a sort of brief outline of how the story goes.
So it's based in our beautiful British woodlands, and the animals come across something that shouldn't be there, and they spend a bit of time trying to work out what it actually is and what they could do with it. And then they realize it's some plastic waste that, you know, really shouldn't be there. And they try and come up with ideas of how they could reuse it so that it's not going to waste somewhere. And they realize that there is no way for it to magically disappear to. And so that they have to take responsibility and do something with it, even though it isn't their waste. You know, so that's kind of in a nutshell the story. And it's sort of, you know, about how, I suppose, it'll help us and small children think about how we can reuse things, or, you know, try not to drop stuff where it shouldn't be and all of that. And hopefully in a lovely, gentle way.
You could sort of hear the kids would be saying when they see an old can, oh, you can't let that go into the forest. You know, that they would be, should think they'll connect like that. I love that. My grandson loved it.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to buy this, where can they buy this book?
So they can go to the website, which is ecoable.co.uk, and my book section is on there. So we've got also, if you sign up to the newsletter, this is something that I felt quite strongly about, is having accessibility for it to anyone regardless. So we've put a free video of me reading the story on there if you sign up to the newsletters, and that's for anybody. So you don't have to buy anything for that. You can just access that, but the book's also on there to purchase, and our colouring book, which we've made in the same way, which is slightly different, but it's...
Oh, you've done a colouring book?
We have, yeah, which is lovely.
All right, so everybody can go to EcoAble and website and get this book. And this sort of book will never go out of fashion or anything. It will be around forever.
I hope so. My whole thing is that it's going to be in every home and every school and nursery, and that it's going to be like a treasured book, one of the books that you remember from your childhood when you're grown up. That's what I hope for it.
Like I remember Janet and John. Oh, God, I'm giving away my age. So this is your very first book.
Yes.
Do you think that you're going to do more?
Yeah, we're already, I've written the second one.
Oh.
And I'm halfway through writing the third, and the second one's being illustrated. So, yeah, it's definitely given me a real sense of purpose to kind of keep writing and keep getting the message out there about, you know, the impact on our environments with plastic waste and stuff.
I mean, to find an illustrator that gets you just like that is amazing. I mean,
Anna's incredibly talented, and she makes all sorts of illustrations. But I just really love her style of black and white, and that sort of real sense of, I don't know, atmosphere that she creates with her illustrations. And I met her just through a local networking group in Cheltenham, and I'd known her for a while, and she'd never illustrated a book before. So it's been a learning curve for both of us. But it's just amazing how we've come together, and she just totally got what the book was about and what the illustrations needed to look like. So I'm really thrilled with it. I couldn't be prouder of her. I think she's done an incredible job.
She has. Have you always wanted to be a writer?
Yeah, I think sort of throughout my preschool time, but just because books were so important. And, you know, as a child, I read everything I possibly could. I think I've always had that thought in my head, but you never think that you're going to do it, do you? You never think it's possible until you just think, actually, why can't I?
And I think it's beautiful to write children's books.
Yeah. It is a real privilege, isn't it, I think, to sort of know that you're going to be sort of instrumental in some sort of change in them learning things and talking about important things in, you know, a way that's right for them.
So this book will be the most perfect Christmas present for anybody, for any family to buy for their kids. What age group do you think your book will appeal to?
I think it's ideally suited to like 3 to 7s. I mean, I've had some lovely reviews from 8-year-olds too. So around those ages, I think it's an ideal age range for little ones. You know, and they'll take different things from it depending on their age. The older children that I've had feedback from have loved it and have loved the messaging and have thought about what they're going to do afterwards to kind of tackle waste and stuff like that. So and for younger ones, you know, the illustrations are beautiful and it'll just be a lovely story. So
yeah, and I think catching children at such a young age to have that visual in front of them and to get the story will, you know, as you said, stay with them, and they will be more aware of our environment and, you know, what's that can doing over, you know, by looking and reading that book, it sort of helps them on their way to love the planet and the animals around us in a more, you know, loving way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, young children are very aware of things, you know, especially to do with the environment. And I think it's really lovely to have a way for them to explore those issues, you know, in a gentle, lovely story. And it's not too scary, you know, it's not telling them the answers. It's giving them the opportunity to kind of think for themselves and to enjoy it in that way. And then sort of maybe come up with ideas about how they can make a difference and all of that as they get older.
So when can we expect to see the next book out?
Oh, that's a good question. Hopefully by next summer. So we're working on it at the moment. So that's my sort of target goal, that we could get it published by the beginning of the summer, hopefully. Fingers crossed if it all goes well.
Is the next one going to be sort of very similar to Away? Or is it a totally different story?
It's totally different. It has a slightly similar theme, as you can imagine. But yes, the setting is different and the characters are different. And it's a different feel as well. But I'm just as excited about this one. So I can't wait to kind of get it finished. We're sort of working on the illustrations at the moment. So
how lovely. Now, outside of your book writing, how do you live a sustainable life?
Oh,
do you live a sustainable life?
I'd like to say, yes, I'm 100% sustainable, but, you know, I'm human the same as everyone else. So I think the best way to describe it is I try my best each day to, you know, make better choices and challenge myself when, you know, I find myself thinking, oh, I'll just do that because it's easy. And you know, to say to myself, well, hang on a minute, it might be easy, but that's not the most sustainable way to do something. So I think for me, it's just about trying to do things where I can and perhaps challenging family to do the same.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, as one individual, we can feel quite overwhelmed, can't we? We're trying to do everything and, you know, juggling busy lives. But I think, you know, there's lots we can do successfully. So it's about just taking those small steps and making those small changes bit by bit until you kind of feel like, yes, I am living as sustainably as I can in this moment.
Yes, well, with doing a book and doing it all eco and printing it and all that, that is a big step. What's one tip that you would say, just one for the audience?
Making swaps to like reusables, you know, that's a really easy, simple thing that you can do, from coffee cups to bags to, there's, you know, there are, you've probably got hundreds of these things in your own home, you know. And it's not, don't be afraid of plastic. If you have a plastic bag, use it, you know. Let's not throw them away or shove them in the cupboard. If you've already got stuff, just use what you've got rather than buying new stuff. So I suppose that's two tips, but those are my top tips.
Danny, it's been so lovely to talk to you about your lovely book.
Well, thanks, Jo. Thanks so much. It's been really nice.
It's a real pleasure.
So that's it for another episode of My Green Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and gained some really useful tips on living ethically. Now, if you did, please subscribe to My Green Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, and be sure to give us a 5-star rating. It's really important to us. It's so that others wanting a greener lifestyle can find us.
Thank you to our guest, Dani Sita. Links to her and her excellent book are in the show notes.
Follow us on @JoWoodOfficial and @MyGreenPod.
For more tips and the latest ethical news, go to mygreenpod.com or email us hello@mygreenpod.com. See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
My Green Podcast was presented by Jarvis Smith, Katie Hill and Jo Wood. It was produced by Mike Hansen for Pod People Productions. Music by The Phoenix Rose.